Today, our job seeker broadcast topic is how to negotiate a job offer. And I wonder, have you been let go from your last job because of the slow economy and are still trying to get back into the workforce? Are you discouraged because your resume is not getting any responses? Maybe you've been a finalist and the job went to an inside person, or perhaps you're just getting started job hunting after being out of the workforce a few years. Well, if any of these feelings are nagging at you, I'm glad you've tuned in for today's Job Seeker Podcast. I hope our show will give you an edge, job search, and maybe, just maybe, help you land that special position. You can join our show's discussion by emailing me your questions. I'm joined today by a special guest, co-host Linda Baugh out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. You can see Linda's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our idacgroup.com toolbar. Linda has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1985. She is president and founder of ACE Executive Careers, based in Scottsdale, Arizona. And Linda began her profession as a headhunter just the same as I did, and that changes everything. There she learned how to help people get hired. And from there, she expanded her expertise to include helping clients at mid-career find their occupational sweet spot. Linda has published numerous articles and is a sought-after speaker. Now, for the first 15 minutes of our show, Linda and I will talk about our topic, negotiating your job offer, and then we'll focus on answering job seeker questions that we receive. Linda, how are you doing today?
John, I am doing great. It is absolutely beautiful here in Arizona, and I'm delighted to help our listeners with negotiating.
Yes, well, I think it's always beautiful in Arizona, isn't it?
Well, 9 months out of the year.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, everybody has a swimming pool for the rest of the hot weather. Well, you know, we've taken this interesting topic of job negotiating. For you and I, it's just like sitting down, picking up the cloth napkin, putting it on our lap, and looking forward to diving in. But for a lot of job seekers, negotiating is something that feels sleazy or underhanded or uncomfortable, and probably the only other experience they've had is in selling a house or in selling a car. And in most cases, especially selling a house, the realtor is doing all the negotiating. So I would say negotiating is probably second to getting up in front of people to give a speech in terms of fear and foreboding. Would you say that?
Yes, I would. A lot of people just don't even ask once they get a job offer. And the sad thing about that is I saw a study not too long ago, John, where human resources professionals indicated that most of the time, the candidate leaves money on the table simply because they don't ask.
Yes, I've certainly experienced that. Now, we want to be careful here in defining what we're talking about. We're not trying to encourage our listeners to be chiselers or greedy or trying to strangle an employer for something. What we're trying to communicate is that in many, many cases, when a job offer is made, there are things in the offer that are missing or things in the offer that perhaps aren't exactly what the new employee was hoping for. And salary is just one of those many, many things.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
So what we want to be careful of here is that, you know, next to perhaps choosing one's lifetime marital partner, you're talking about a future job situation is joining a family. I mean, we're going to work for somebody, and they have their house rules. They have how we do things around here. And most of the time, that job applicant has not learned what the house rules are before they sign on the dotted line, before they agree to go to work. So that's where this negotiating comes in. So let's define the terms. We're saying that during the interviewing process, a job applicant needs to dance to the tune, do what is necessary and needed to get that offer, even if there is some suspicion or hesitation or something that the applicant is concerned about. During the interview process is not the time to raise delicate questions or look under the carpet. Once the offer is made, however, everything changes. And Linda, what I like to say is, in coaching our applicants, I say, Mr. Employer, we've spent the last several weeks looking at my background and my qualifications, and really during that time, I have not had the opportunity to get to know your organization as well as you know me. So would it be acceptable to you if I take the next week or so to get to know your organization a little better? I would appreciate being able to talk to someone who works in the department that I'll be working for and ask a few questions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so because an offer now is on the table, the whole shift of balance of authority and power has shifted here, where they are now saying, come join us, and now the applicant is saying, I am so delighted, and I just need to walk through this house before I rent it or I agree to come on board. Okay, now, Linda, there's something you mentioned that really I think our listeners need to know. And that is, you feel that negotiating doesn't start after the offer. It starts some other time. Help us understand that.
Well, there is a tenet of negotiating in general, and that is that negotiation is not an event. It is a process. Mm-hmm. And what the candidate can realize is that every move that they make, every communication, every phone call, every email, every letter, every follow-up is building value. They're becoming more respected, more valuable in the eyes of the people in the company, so that by the time it comes to negotiate, you know, they've been increasing, if you will, their respect from the people in the organization, and by the time the offer is made, it is clear that the hiring manager wants the person.
Yes.
So now they're in a very good position to negotiate, but it's a win-win. You know, by the time you're really negotiating, it's like the hiring manager wants you, you would like to be there, you're just working out the details.
Yes. Now, I failed to, at the top of the hour, explain, and help me with this, Linda, to explain what are typical things that a job applicant should consider when negotiating. Let me just go through some of my list, mm-hmm. and you'll add to that, and maybe we'll just, build from each other here. But usually the compensation package is something, but there are other things like how many days of vacation do you get, personal time off, are there flex hours, is there a policy regarding promotions and advancement, Are there any perks and benefits regarding attending professional conferences? Are those fees paid? Is the travel paid? I'm really big on our job applicants talking to someone that reports to that boss to find out what are that boss's good points and maybe not so good points. We'll talk about that a little later. You and I know we talked about hair-raising stories where a person will be brought in from distant, distant city, relocated, and then within 6 months things didn't work out, and it's sort of goodbye. Well, wait a minute. I had to sell my house at a loss. I moved here. I'm in the rears as far as just my own personal finances with the buying and selling of real estate, and now I'm in this foreign city. I've only been here 6 months, and I'm out on my ear. Wait a minute here. These are all types of things that should be open. And, you know, I'm almost thinking of when somebody buys a house, one of the smart things they do is they require an inspector to come in and they check for the standard things like termite rot and all that. But there's a whole bunch of other things they never would have thought of. That's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to say, let's, the old adage, look before you leap. Let us investigate and understand, not to be in any way demeaning or trying to browbeat the employer, but just to understand, do you know what you're getting into? Linda, add to my list, what are some other things that you encourage your clients to look at and negotiate for?
Well, I'll share real things that I've seen people have been able to negotiate for. An early review, a 6 month review, especially if the salary is just a little bit lower than they had anticipated, and many employers will agree to that, a 6 month review, telecommuting. One client that I worked with recently, a privately held company, did agree to start his health benefits day one. I mean, that was just a hugely important item to him. A budget for your professional development, whether that's that the company simply pays for your professional association dues and to attend meetings, and you mentioned like conferences, conventions, trade shows. That's a wonderful benefit, and it helps the person improve their career and their professional development.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a few things.
And I'm even thinking, as you and I kind of bounce off each other here, we've done this before, we got our signal for break, Linda. Let's pick this up after the break.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give meaning and purpose to their life.
So, John, what about boomers, those who are approaching retirement age? There are a lot of us out there.
That's right, Evan, many millions. We provide very specific help to boomers and their families.
You mean that the choice what to do after retirement is just as important as selecting one's career at 20 years of age?
Well, Evan, think on this. Let's say you've been grinding it out, just waiting for that 25-year goal pin. And now that's where you are. Does that mean your life of significance and purpose ends? You've heard that the new 65 is the old 45. A person still has 10, 15, maybe 20 more productive years ahead of them.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Well, we help adults, many adults, find that ideal post-retirement career. For once, they don't have to be trapped into their occupation. It can be free to choose to give it back to make a difference.
But, John, why couldn't a mid-30s person choose to do that?
Well, they most certainly can, and I hope they will. but some of us have been so close to the grindstone of work that we have never considered looking into the future of making a difference or giving back.
Okay, John, I want to discuss this further, that is, considering a purpose for what we do beyond a paycheck and benefits. Can we talk some more about this during the next break?
Sure, you bet.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And here we are back at our Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic today is negotiating your job offer, and I'm delighted to have with me as a special co-host Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is the president and founder of ACE Executive Careers and has been counseling men and women to advance in their careers since 1985. Linda, we got cut off at the break, and I think you were right in the some profound new principle to help us.
Well, there, I had mentioned some of the what I call the tenets of negotiating, and one of them being that the person who names a number first during the interview loses their power. And one of the toughest things that I've seen candidates come up against is they're in the interview and they're asked the question, "So, what kind of compensation are you looking for?"
Yeah.
And it's really hard to, you know, to not want to just blurt out. But I know that you and I both encourage our candidates, our clients, to do salary research so that when they do present a salary level, when they come in for negotiating and they want to name some numbers, they have data to back up for that market, for instance, for the Portland market where you are, the greater Phoenix market where I am, and for others of folks that are in Chicago or the San Francisco Bay Area. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I know you and I have talked about this, and we're in agreement that employers' favorite questions, this could even be employers that are family members, you know, Uncle So-and-so that's got a manufacturing plant out there on the edge of town, they will early on, even before there's a formal interview and maybe even during the first interview, say, "So what kind of money are you looking for? Or how much are you expecting to get paid?" And the important thing is you should not answer that question, because it'll either be too high or too low, and it will divert the entire discussion from that moment on. The only way that a job applicant is going to win favor to have a better salary picture is if the employer has decided, "I like this person, I want this person," and price is important, but it's I don't want to have that get me held up here. I want that person. This is the best person. And you can kind of see the employer starting to get excited and so on. So then that employer is in a much better place to flex on the compensation package, benefits, vacation, pay, et cetera. But if it's an initial, "I don't know you, and I just need to have one question answered, what kind of money are you looking for?" Well, then you're out. Whatever. I mean, your chance of hitting it on the head is just not there. So, Linda, you and I teach our clients to do a little dance here, and we say, "Well, Mr. Jones, thank you for that question. At this time, I hope that we're getting to know each other to decide, is there sufficient interest in and capabilities and qualifications at that point when we both realize there could be something here that could bring us together for me to assist your company and you to invite me to join your family, then perhaps we're in a better place to talk about compensation. Now, those words just rolled off the top of my head, but I think I've said them a few hundred times, so it came easy. Our clients cannot wing it, so they need to say it into some kind of recording device over and over and over so they can say it without conflicting body language and plastic, or I just memorized this or something like that. But if our client is pressed to the wall, then absolutely they have to have the background of all this research instead of just, well, I think I'm worth this, this, and this. It's really
right.
No different than somebody selling their home and they put out a price and the buyer goes, where in the world did you get this price?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, hey, wait a minute here. And, the seller should come back and say, well, I did a survey, and this is what homes are going for. Where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Linda, let's keep going here. You're talking about principles, so I keep interrupting. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let's keep going here.
Well, the couple of principles, the person who names a number first ends up being in a less of a control position. So we want our candidates to anticipate those salary questions. That's one of them. There's also a fellow out here in the United States by the name of Lou Adler, and he is a guru of executive recruiters, and he actually teaches executives how to interview people to get the best candidate. And basically what he says is that the best predictor of future success is past performance. So if our candidates come in and they're able to build value, by the time the negotiation comes, and we talked about the negotiation doesn't start when you get the offer, it starts way back when. So if they can build value, and if you don't mind if I add one little suggestion about that salary question, a person could certainly respond to, well, what kind of compensation are you looking for? And instead of, we don't want to give a number, but I've heard some people say, I have no concern at all that if I'm the right person for the job that will come to, an appropriate salary agreement. Right now, I really don't know enough about the scope of responsibility. Could you please tell me more about, and then they, lead back into talking about the job.
Yeah. Well, that, Linda, you say that so smoothly. I bet you just made that up in the last 2 seconds, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But I agree with what you said, that the folks that are listening to us will need to have their own outline of, okay, if I'm asked that salary question, what am I going to say? And it needs to be in their own words so they can be comfortable with it.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, if we were to write a list of the tough interview questions you must answer, this was got to be number one because it'll make or break the whole deal. Absolutely critical. Okay, so we're talking about building a value and also building trust during the whole process to lead us to this point where we have an offer and now we choose to look at the details of the offer and request some flexibility. We're in that process. Linda, how about some more principles that have worked for you and your clients?
One of them, and you might chuckle at this, but one of the principles that we teach our clients here is that when you get the offer, and it's usually over the phone, take a deep breath.
I did chuckle.
Take a deep breath because the emotions are welling up, and for a lot of folks, it's like, oh my gosh, thank heavens I got this offer. So, be prepared to defer, meaning, you know, I would say to you, John, thank you so much for wanting me to be on your team. I'm really, you know, looking forward to that possibility. And pretty much like you were saying earlier, but I really need some time to be sure that I understand everything. So could we, and then we lay out some things we want to do, could we then get together next Thursday? And we could sit down, and this is an important phrase, and go over the numbers.
Yes.
By saying that, I'm showing my interest in the job and my enthusiasm, but I haven't agreed to the numbers yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we get together, I've really given that employer just a little bit of a heads up, you know, and we'll go over the numbers. But here's the good news. They want us when they make the offer. We're probably 90% sure we'd like to be there. And instead of it being like two football teams going against each other, we're just trying to work out the details so that we can get on with the work that we want to do.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And it may be something as simple as, I keep bringing up this example of buying a house, because everyone's been through that, and they get the coaching from their realtor, but they were a participant. Well, it may be something as major as, if we're going to agree on that price, then the seller needs to redo the roof. Or I know in my house hunting experience, there have been times where I remember one situation where there was this huge pile in the backyard of stuff that, to say it was a composting pile would be very generous. It was just stuff. And so the offer, the negotiating offer, had to make a comment that that pile will be gone. It had nothing to do with the house, but it did have to do with the grounds and everything. And that's really what we're talking about, is trying to see, are there any particular items that need to be dealt with. Now, as you and I are talking, Linda, I want to throw out something that happens, and 50% of the time the new hire is a victim. And I'm talking about those difficult situations that you and I have when somebody is hired for a job and it's a cleanup. They're being hired to come in and straighten out, clean up, terminate some individuals. But it's definitely very clear, we need you to come in and straighten out this department, straighten out this company, straighten out this branch office. We'll pick this up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing a post-retirement career to give back, to give meaning and purpose. John, in our last break, you suggested that the idea of a career being something bigger than a paycheck is a worthy thought for a boomer, but also for a 30-something career seeker.
That's right, Evan. We can truly choose a post-retirement career as well as an occupation which provides sufficient income, stability, vacation perks, and still make a difference. And that's because our team has a working knowledge of over 90,000 careers, and many of those fit that description.
Well, John, why wouldn't everyone want meaning and purpose?
Well, unfortunately, many of us have not considered that final layer of preference for our retirement or our present work life. We kind of get caught up in the trap of staying employed and reading all the How to Succeed, Move Up the Ladder books and blogs. Many of those helps are valid, but they may not be the best for everyone.
Well, John, for the next break, could you give us some examples of the difference between grinding out a job and finding a career which provides meaning and purpose, even for someone like a boomer?
Sure, let's do it.
Thanks, John. If you just turned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we are back talking about negotiating your job offer, and I'm delighted to have as my guest co-host Linda Baugh, who is the president and founder of ACE Executive Careers in Scottsdale, Arizona. And Linda, you and I were discussing a key principle just before the break. Let me quickly finish it up and get your thoughts on this. So somebody has been given a job offer. It's very clear. It's a management or executive position, and it's very clear we need you to come in and straighten this out. Now, unfortunately, what happens is that person is ready, equipped, and capable to go do that. However, sometimes the real problem is the employer that hired the individual, not the subordinates in that department. And so one of my negotiating principles for those kinds of offers is to have, as a condition to the acceptance, an approved game plan. That means that the executive says, well, this is great, and obviously let's just assume all the terms of the offer are agreeable, but the executive or the manager says, well, here's what I'd like to propose is in the first 90 days, I learn and get acquainted with your organization, and then at that time, I'd like to present a plan, and I'd like to make the plan my acceptance of the offer conditional upon that plan. Now, it may only take 30 days, a little flex here, but the point is that if the person is to clean things up, that person needs to make sure that they have the authority and they have everything they need to do the cleanup, and that the problem is not their boss or the board or somebody else who isn't going to let them do it. Any thoughts on that, Linda?
Absolutely. Because so many people that I've talked to, whether they're looking for a job or they're just struggling with some issues at their employment, it's because they've been given the responsibility but not the authority to take care of the issue, and sometimes not the resources, whether it's a budget, whether it's manpower, whatever that is. So yeah. That's a very good thing to include. May I add another one?
You got the floor. Go.
Okay. And this may or not feel comfortable for some of our listeners, but many people do it, and that is they negotiate as part of their offer the severance plan.
Yes.
If for any reason things change, if your company is purchased by somebody else, if there's a merger, there's an acquisition, if the top executive level changes, if anything changes that's not due to performance, that there's already in place a severance package.
Yeah. Very, very important. And thank you for bringing that up. And you're absolutely right. It's sort of like planning your own funeral when you're 55. People say, well, it's just smart for you to choose the plot of land and, how do you want to proceed this? And wait a minute. But absolutely, yes. Severance arrangement, severance agreement, there are key things there. And I think that also the severance arrangement topic brings up that issue of somebody moving from a distant city to come to work for the company. And the severance arrangement would cover, okay, what if something doesn't work out, and what are we going to do?
Right.
And let's decide that now before I accept the offer.
Right.
Because, you know, if there isn't a severance, then the employer really isn't feeling any responsibility for moving this family. I mean, you know, taking the kids out of school, we're selling the house quickly. There's a lot of stress involved. I mean, think of all those books and boxes and it goes on and on and on. Let alone the cost of the move, who's going to pay for that? So absolutely, severance is key. Any other good principles before we jump to job seeker questions?
Well, I just wanted to confirm that, the Society of Human Resource Managers in a recent survey did say that most candidates do leave money or benefits on the table simply because they don't ask. And really, the worst that somebody could say is, gosh, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And then the job, here's the one of the tenants, the job seeker, the candidate, needs to be ready with their own suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, if you can't meet, I understand you can't meet the salary. What about a 6-month review? What about a sign-on bonus to make up the difference? So be ready to suggest these things. Don't expect the company to be saying, we could do this or we could do this. Be ready with your list. That's
absolutely
my best advice.
Linda, I couldn't underscore that more. As a matter of fact, with clients, I've even gone so far as to say there's 12 different things that can be part of your compensation in case what they're paying you per month doesn't match and their hands are tied. Well, here are some other things. Car allowance, car expenses, educational reimbursement. Those are all very, very tangible things that a person can request. And you're absolutely right. The applicant needs to be the one coming up with this and not put the onus on the employer, because the employer may never have thought about these creative options and really be all thumbs, and the whole relationship starts to get a little sour and we're starting off on the wrong foot. So that very, very important, yeah. Well, Linda, let's jump into the job seeker questions. Have you got one there that we can take a look at?
Absolutely. I have a wonderful one from Ed in North Carolina. I'm a licensed mechanical engineer. I feel like a square peg in a round hole. If I could do it all over again, I would teach high school and coach sports, but there's not enough money doing that. How do I use my engineering and also my passion for teaching and coaching?
Wow. Well,
sounds like my ex-husband, seriously.
Well, you know, engineering is one of my favorite areas. I cut my teeth on the whole occupation profession of engineering. There's so many, many different ones. And there is a stereotype, unfortunately, for mechanical engineers that's quite different than civil engineers. So I would say the very first thing that Ed needs to do is he has to clean the slate in terms of the stereotype. The safest way to do that, the way that it causes the least amount of pain, is to go take some courses. Now, I'm not suggesting a degree program, but to take some courses, maybe just even one course, that represents the new direction that Ed wants to go. And what that does is it allows Ed to say, well, I'm a student studying da-da-da-da-da because this is the new field that I want to go into. And so the very first image that Ed is projecting, now Ed's been in the workforce, so he isn't looking like just a recent grad, this is my field. Now, to jump right into high school education, it's going to be a stretch to go into the public school system because there are just all kinds of hoops somebody has to go through. Private education is much, much easier. Privately funded schools, much easier to get into. And so if Ed is just adamant that he wants to teach high school and coach sports, then the best thing to do would be to get a list of all the private schools in town and start volunteering as an assistant coach to get to know the folks. It is a good old boy system. And then to take it from there. Now, the other thing I would say, and then I'll shut up, Linda, let you explain the real what he ought to do, but there are many other alternative kinds of teaching / sports coaching roles that are out there. There are many education programs directed, sports education programs directed at teens, especially teens that are in trouble, the marginalized, the ones that get in trouble. There's a whole favorite area of mine, wilderness therapy, and that's where individuals take troubled youth out, and they take them out on ski slopes and in rock climbing and whitewater rafting, and they use that wilderness to help straighten out some brain waves that got twisted. And so there are other possibilities than the stereotype of working in a high school as a sports coach. Linda, why don't you take a shot at that?
Well, I'm just going to build on what you said, John, and I don't know how Ed's going to take this, but I recently was talking with someone who came from almost the same kind of background as Ed, and you know what he's interested in? He's interested in getting into a program. There was one called the Outward Bound, where they do expeditions, real wilderness expeditions, and all types of, you know, physical challenges for people. And there are veterans programs and programs for youth. So that, you know, a program like that. But you know what Ed would need to see, he'd need to do that informational interviewing, right, John, so he could find out, what does it pay? What does it take to get into this?
Absolutely. As we've said over and over again, you got to meet the person that has a job before you even begin thinking of making a change. And certainly, I mean, expect this. Here you are, a mechanical engineer, you're applying for a position. What do you think the employer is going to say? He says, wait a minute, what is a mechanical engineer doing applying for a job teaching kids? Come on. And Ed better have a good story, and the story better start with, 6 months ago, I began research, and that led me to, and I met this person, and I looked at him and what he does, and I said, this is the job for me. This is the next chapter of my life. And so for the last several months, I've been preparing myself. We have our last break, Linda, and we'll get back and answer some more of these questions.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can choose to find meaning and purpose in a post-retirement career as well as a new 30-something job. John, you started this discussion saying that boomers are now free to choose to pursue something fulfilling, to give back.
That's right, Evan.
And then I asked, why can't a 30-something person make that choice? And you said they could. They just had to be intentional to add that third layer of purpose rather than just the paycheck. So here's my question. Can you give us an example of someone who has done this?
Well, Evan, I recall a client who worked for the same employer for 35 years as a director of quality control and manufacturing. There was a change in management, and our client was transitioned out. As he and I began to discuss his next chapter in life, I challenged him to think about pursuing something that felt like he was making a difference, something meaningful to him.
So this was a real person?
Yes, it was a real person. Let's call him Phil. He had 1 year of community college and felt like his life wouldn't really amount to much. All he thought he could do was find a similar job and then after a few more years retire, buy a big motorhome and drive coast to coast.
I've seen a few of those.
Well, as we began to explore Phil's aptitude assessment results, he pointed to a couple of the printout options and said, "You know, I always wanted to do something for troubled kids, for teenagers."
So what happened?
A long story short, he got hired by a county government agency to administrate the placement of foster teens in good homes.
Did he have some prior experience to get that?
Not at all. We helped him plan a strategy after he met the person who had his job.
You mean he first looked at several careers you suggested, then chose this one because of the on-site validation visit?
That's right. And in his job search, he bypassed many who had four-year college degrees and even graduate school degrees. And you know, Phil had only 1 year of community college with no prior experience.
Well, I think I'm speaking for our listening audience when I say that this is a great example, and I wish we had time to find out how you helped him do it.
Yes, that's true, Evan, but then that is what these job seeker broadcasts are all about. I am sharing the same things I taught Phil, all these lessons learned, and he did it, and it worked for him.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And here we are talking about negotiating your job offer. Linda Baugh, with the founder and president of ACE Executive Careers, is just giving us some just incredibly good stuff, just some good proven, these aren't theories, these are demonstrated and proven results. I'm trying to say a few things in here too, Linda, as we go along. But we're answering now questions from job seekers, and are we done with Ed and ready to go to another one, or is there something else?
I think Ed would have plenty to think about, but we have another wonderful question from Nancy in Texas. I'm over 50 and just recovered from a stroke. I want to return to the workforce. I wonder if I'm too old to compete with recent college graduates. I'm also thinking of relocating out of Texas. How would I job search in a different state?
Ah, well, you know, when you and I get these kinds of situations, Linda, sometimes it just feels overwhelming. I mean, here's Nancy. She's been living with this, and all we do is get a little soundbite, and it just sounds, wow, there's a lot here. So, first of all, we have the fact Nancy's saying she's over 50 and she's probably feeling like she's too old. Number two, she just recovered from a stroke. And then she's talking about relocating. So we really have three separate items that each need to be handled carefully. I prefer and recommend to our clients that we just deal with one of these at a time and not throw them all in there. One of the most difficult things to do in job hunting is to relocate. You are starting from scratch, because the way you get hired is through your network of contacts, somebody that knows somebody. You don't get hired because you're answering ads on some list, especially if you're over 50 and you're recovering from a stroke, which means your resume is going to show a big gap in your employment. And you're absolutely right, Nancy. You can't compete with individuals who don't have this, quote, gap effect. So the person who's going to hire Nancy is someone that has met her, that believes that she can make a significant contribution and that she has assets that can't be found anywhere else. So if Nancy is to move out of Texas, I would say put in 2 years where you have the strongest network of friends, relatives, former coworkers. That's where you, the heart of your job search needs to be. And then if you want to move away from that location, then you at least have 2 years of experience in what you want to do. Now, let's tackle this over 50 competing with recent college graduates. I'm a very boomer-friendly person, and I know that you are too, Linda. And I feel that, unfortunately, too many people feel behind the eight ball on this whole issue of age. And so if the job hunter's only approach to job hunting is answering ads, then it's reasonable to assume when they receive 99% rejections that they're interpreting the rejection because of what appears to be their age, even though it's illegal to state your age or even factors that would allow an employer to figure out your age. Somebody who's already thinking maybe I'm over the hill, they're going to compound that feeling when they get rejections. And really, in today's job hunting market, I mean, people are not getting hired that quickly. And so this could just cause that person to feel down, 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 and discouraged. So the solution in Nancy's situation is she must identify what it is that she wants to do. Secondly, it would be good, since she's been out of the work for a while, for her to take one class that is in the field she wants to pursue. Doesn't have to take it for credit, but that establishes her as a student, and therefore employers are always open to students, because that means you're a learner. And then she hopefully is going to get some doors open. Now, I like to recommend for individuals who are making a career change and have zero contacts that they, instead of job hunting, that they search for field experience. That means they're contacting the very same employers, but they're asking for field experience while they're enrolled in this particular class that is similar in content. And it's while they're on the job that they're demonstrating their competence, relationships are developing, and even if there isn't a job that results, at least there are good relationships, good bonds, and both the coworkers and the supervisor will make referrals. There's a base there to work from. So
you're talking about something like an internship. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Did you say field experience?
Yeah, the thing I've learned, and maybe this is just the Northwest, Linda, the word internship communicates a formal program where there is a, quote, internship supervisor, and this is what our interns do here, and your larger companies have that. But we know that 80% of companies are 20 people or less, so most of the companies out there don't have these formal programs. And if you use the word internship, then the employer is going to say, well, we don't do internships. But if you say field experience, then it's like, well, what are you talking about? You know. And so, that sounds interesting, and off we go. And as long as there is a defined project and there's a number of hours a week and there's a start date and a 90-day end date and there's a completed project, hey, this is everybody wins on the deal.
Absolutely. And employers would probably be thrilled to get someone coming to them proposing something like that. every company, big or small, has a project that needs attention, right?
Yeah, and with, you know, with the economy being rough right now, why not agree to have somebody come in that's willing to do a project that I can't afford to pay somebody to do?
And then guess what? That's a resume builder.
Absolutely, yes. And a network builder in addition. I mean, Nancy should easily gain 5 referrals from all her colleagues at work. And then in addition to that, she should pick up another 5 referrals from the instructor, the professor, who's teaching a class. So that's 10 referrals. That could be a job right there.
Well, and then when she's out networking or talking with people, and they say, well, what are you doing now? Well, I'm doing a project, and it's a project in the field she wants to get into.
Exactly.
So it's not as though, it's not like saying, well, I'm looking for a job. You know, I'm working on a project.
Yes, and especially she sounds like she is apologizing for the fact she's 50 and apologizing for the fact that she just had a stroke. So we can guess when she gets an interview and she's looking that employer face to face, there's some hesitation, fear. Linda, we've run out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
And so that brings to a close our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group, and he's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. And John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.